Somewhere today we're going to sing. Yeah. You ever get a song stuck in your head?
Yes.
It's really, really stuck in your head.
Yes.
I got a song stuck in my head. We're going to get to it sooner or later. I know it. Okay. Bill Johnson says something amazing, and I love this phrase. He says this a lot. He says, God is better than you think.
Yes.
So change the way you think. God's better than you think, so change the way you think. One of the things, and a lot of things in life for me, I'm very purpose driven. Rick Warren wrote the book Purpose Driven Life. I'm purpose driven and goal oriented. I'm constantly trying to find purposes and goals. I think those are important things in life. So, I often try to turn my, if I can say this the right way, turn my thinking as to. Where's my goal? What am I trying to do? Even with ministry, maybe, can I say this, over the last several years, I've had to redefine ministry, redefine what my purpose is. Because, can I go here and tell you, I've been pastoring for quite a few years, I can talk about it. But early on in my pastoral ministry, I thought the goal of my ministry was to fix everybody. Because everybody needed fixed, you know. They would come and tell me what was wrong, and I thought it was my job to fix them. Because that's what pastors do, they fix people. How do you know that? Because that's what my pastor tried to do. Fix everybody that had a problem. Right? So that's what pastors do, because that was my view, you know. Because we all have a view. We have a, can I say a world view? Call it whatever you want to. But my view of that, my idea of that was that this is what pastors do. They fix people. So I thought it was my job to fix people. And you run around and try to fix everybody. And I would tell you that today, if you ask me, what's your goal in ministry? What are you working toward? What are you trying to accomplish? I would tell you that my goal, what I feel is very important to me, is to help people change the way they think. I'll never be able to help you change the way you act if I can't help you change the way you think. If I only change the way you act without changing the way you think, I'm just controlling you. And I'll only be able to control you while I'm in your presence. That is a good word. That is a good word. Mm-hmm. I'm going to change the way you think, not just the way you act. Does that make sense? So it's a challenge. The challenge is to get people to change the way they think. How do you get them to change the way they think? Present something new. Present something new. Give them something to consider. And it's not about convincing them that you're right and they're wrong. We're going to talk about confrontation today. Most confrontation happens because I think I'm right and you're wrong. And I'm going to convince you that I'm right. And in my goal of trying to convince you that I'm right, I'm really trying to convince you that you're wrong. And that's when we end up in an argument. Come on. I've said it lots of times in preaching. The only time Lori and I ever fight is when she's wrong. We never disagree when she's right. Do you understand what I just said? Because I wouldn't be disagreeing with her if I really believed that she was right. I disagree with her when I really believe she's wrong. So we argue because she's wrong. If she quit being wrong, we'd quit arguing. Does it make sense from that mentality? You understand that? So we deal with confrontation all the time. The problem is we have a really messed up view of confrontation. We have a really messed up view of what confrontation is supposed to be about or what it even looks like. And sometimes it causes tremendous conflict in our lives. Because we deal with confrontation all wrong. Okay? Confrontation is never about me controlling you. Confrontation is about me empowering you to make good choices. Does that make sense? And we have to look at confrontation as a tool for empowerment, not a tool for control. And that's where we get messed up. That's where we get in trouble. That's where we have conflict. That's where we get, can I go there? That's where we get divorce and a whole lot of other things. Because we don't know how to deal with confrontation because nobody ever explained it to us. So we're going to talk about confrontation, some keys for confrontation. We'll have some fun with this, okay? Yeah, my mind is spinning a lot of places. Mark said something to me just a little while ago. We'll talk about this for a minute. A lot of the problems we have that cause confrontation is because I would believe that every one of you in this room wants to be dead to yourself. Yeah. Did you catch what I said? Yeah. Wants to be. I didn't say everybody in this room is. Yeah. And honestly, there is so much liberty and freedom in being dead. And I will make this statement. I'm in the process of dying. Okay. I'd like to be able to stand here as a pastor and as a ministry leader and call it whatever you want to, and we can put all kind of titles there and tell you I am dead to myself and alive unto Christ. And just when I think I'm completely dead to myself, I have a resurrection service. And we raise the dead again. And we struggle with that sometimes. I'll say this, and it was a very enlightening moment for me. A young lady came to me very frustrated with her husband. She said, "I can get along with anybody else on the planet except him." Anybody ever been there? You understand what I'm saying? You know? Yeah. He has the power to push my buttons. So we need to pray right now. Pray for him. Took her hands and said, "Father, I just thank you for this precious woman in front of me. And I'm asking you, God, with everything in me, please, Lord, take away all her buttons so he has nothing left to push." Because watch this. Do you understand that? I don't have the power to control you. I have the power to control me. I have to learn what it is to be dead to myself. Because I can't control you. I can't control your action. I can control my reaction. Did y'all follow what I just said? That's like worth coming. See you later. No, I'm okay. Listen, okay. Listen, but think about this, okay? Because the truth of the matter is, I have to get to that place where I'm dying out to myself. One of the things that I so admire about Pastor Dan, and I think one of the challenges that's in front of us on a regular basis, is when you're listening to him teach, when you're listening to him share, even out of all the life experiences, I believe the difference between Pastor Dan and a whole lot of people that I know in the body of Christ is he's a lot more dead than the rest of us. He's deader. Does that make sense? Y'all follow that? I don't know. Is there different degrees of dead? But and I understand that. Please understand that phrase, because John's right. I guess I've never thought about different degrees of dead. Yeah. Yeah. Some of us have been mortally wounded. We're just not dead yet. We're still on life support. We're on life support. Okay. Get somebody to pull the plug. Okay. But you can see the challenge. Come on, we can see the challenge to that. The challenge is dying. The challenge is, can I say this? We work real hard to protect ourselves. Does that make sense? We work real hard to protect ourselves. We work real hard to protect our own feelings and our own. Do you understand that? Because that's really big in my heart. In trying to protect myself, I keep myself in bondage. There's a bondage to that. Actually, remember I said a little bit when we were first just kind of getting, we'll sing sometime, because it's so in my heart. The song that's in my heart is, "My chains are gone. I've been set free." Do you understand? I'll never be free from you until I learn what it is to be free from me. We were talking about that a little bit yesterday. I think so much of my chains have absolutely nothing to do with you and everything to do with me. I've got to learn to be free from me. I've got to quit. We're trained for self-preservation. Sunday school class was going on, and the Sunday school teacher was teaching about heaven, talking about how beautiful heaven was and what a wonderful place heaven is. It was just a small kids class, first, second, and third graders. And the teacher said, after this marvelous dissertation about heaven said, how many of you want to go to heaven? And everybody in the class raised their hand except little Johnny. So she said again, she said, come on. You know, everybody wants to go to heaven, right? How many want to go to heaven? Everybody in the class raised their hand except for little Johnny. And she said, she looked at him, she said, Johnny, don't you want to go to heaven when you die? He said, well, yeah. She said, why didn't you raise your hand? He said, I thought you was getting up a load to go now. We have this thing of self-preservation. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Can I tell you something? And the reality of that is that a lot of times the guards that we put around our life, the walls that we put up, you all know what I'm talking about, the stuff that keeps people back is because we're preserving ourselves. We're trying to protect this. We're trying to the walls that I've built to keep you out have become a prison that's kept me in. Because we've been abused? We've been abused by family. We've been abused by friends. We've been abused by the church. We've been abused by spiritual authorities. Come on. We've mishandled confrontation in a lot of ways, and it's caused us to become very defensive, okay? In that same thing, watch this. Think about this. I constantly will have somebody else say, hey, meet me in my office. Do you know what happens when I say to somebody, hey, meet me in my office? Oh, my gosh. What'd I do? Why? Because I'm being called to the pastor's office, right? I'm only bringing them in there because I want to talk with them, and it may be something that's absolutely hilarious. I'm just looking for a quiet place for us to go. It has nothing to do with, oh my gosh, you're in trouble. But whether we got called as a kid to the principal's office, whether we got called to the pastor's office, somebody in authority, the boss, wants you to meet me in my office, he might be wanting to give you a raise. But your immediate thought was, oh my gosh, I've been called to the boss's office. Why? Because they're the authority, and we've become all but afraid of authority. Am I right? Okay, so we stop and think about it. Man, let's just go for it. Let's go to Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. I love this. We're going to talk a while. Okay? George, I was going to say that I've never taught this before, and it's like a pilot. You know where I'm at, okay? Yeah, you know where I'm at, okay, yeah. But we won't go there. Go to Galatians 6 and 1. You're welcome. Catch this and see what he says. I'm going to read this out of the King James. There's a couple other versions I like better, but I kind of have a liking for this Bible. But in 6 and 1 he says, brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you that are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Another version says in the spirit of gentleness. Okay? That's a strong word right there. Meekness or gentleness. You that are strong. Okay? You which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Isn't that amazing? I love this verse. We're going to talk about confrontation. Brethren, if a man falls in a pit, fell in that hole, you that are spiritual ought to go over there and try to pull him out of that hole. Consider yourself, or you might be the next one in the hole. Y'all follow what he was saying there? I want to talk about that because I'm going to talk. There's so many things that confrontation can do. Confrontation is meant to build trust. It creates intimacy through confrontation. And we think confrontation can possibly create intimacy. But according to Galatians 6 and 1, it'll show us some things that actually confrontation ought to create intimacy and trust if it's handled properly. Okay? Our thought is confrontation leads to injury. Confrontation leads to damage. We can't have confrontation. Even as a pastor, can I tell you this? For much more of my ministry than I'll say, for most of my past, I would have been considered non-confrontational. I hate confrontation. We won't have any confrontation in this church. Because we thought confrontation was bad. We thought confrontation led to injury. We thought confrontation led to trouble. It led to a disconnect. But confrontation is actually meant to be good and helpful when it's done in the spirit of gentleness. Y'all follow what he said there? Because he's dealing with this. If a man be overtaken in a fault, let's call it what it is, a guy's messed up, then you that are spiritual need to confront that situation in a spirit of gentleness to restore him, and consider yourself that if it weren't but for the grace of God, that'd be you laying there. Who knows Moody's statement? Y'all know who D.L. Moody was, right? Everybody okay with D.L. Moody? Moody Bible Institute, one of the greatest and most powerful men of God on the planet in the last 100 years. Moody's at Westminster Abbey, and he's walking with the pastor from that church. And as they round the corner, there's a wino laying in the gutter. And the pastor had taken great concern to clean everything up, make sure everything was just right, make sure everything was just perfect. Made sure, I mean, he lectured the people. Next week, D.L. Moody is coming. You will dress this way. It's all recorded. I mean, he went through a whole shebang of, this is what I expect, because when Moody comes, we want everything to be perfect. They walked around the church, and when they did, there's a wino laying in the gutter with a bottle. And he's like, the pastor's appalled. Oh my gosh, Brother Moody, I didn't want you to even, I'm so sorry you had to even witness that. That's a terrible thing. And Moody looked at him and said, you're kidding me. He said, but for the grace of God, there lays I. But for the grace of God, there lay I. That's the way he said it. But for the grace of God, that would be me. That's such a powerful statement. Considering yourself also, lest you be tempted. Y'all follow what he was saying there? So he says, we got to deal with this stuff. We got to learn to deal with things, okay? When you go to somebody in the spirit of gentleness, the first thing I'm going to tell you is there has to be no desire to control them. You're not there to control them. You're there to empower them. But you got no idea or no desire to control them. And the second thing is you've got to present this with the idea of, I bring no judgment with me. Do you understand what I just said? I am in no way, shape, or form your judge. I'm not here to judge you. We're going to confront the issue, but I'm not here to bring a judgment against you, and I'm not here to control you. I'm simply here to say, let's talk about this and see what we can do, because it's obvious you're in a hole. Am I okay with that? Y'all follow what I'm saying? So we go from there, okay? So I'm not bringing any judgment, no matter what happened. Whether you lied, whether you were dishonoring, whether you were caught in adultery, I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to control you. I'm here to love you, okay? So we check out some things, and we'll talk about this for a while, okay? I think confrontation is carried with it a point of, I want to control you. Can I say this? I don't have the power to control you.
Right.
Who's ever raised a rebellious teenager? Come on. You think you can control them, but you, it will be with varying degrees of success and usually very limited. I don't have the ability to control you. But I do have the ability to empower you. That becomes a huge statement, okay? Our view of confrontation. You've hurt me. Or you've scared me. And I'm here to control you. I'm here to tell you, knock it off. Right? We've done it with our own kids. My kids acted up, and I used to tell them, stop it. You need to stop it right now. Stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. Because if you don't, your mother's going to find out and you're really in trouble then. Okay. They weren't scared of me. They were scared to death of her. And her excuse sometimes was, because I said so. Whose mom ever said, because I said so? Y'all know what I'm talking about? You know? Like, why? Because I said so. Stop it, stop it, stop it. It was all about control. We've tried to control rather than to empower, and we have to learn to empower, not control. So what happens is, my mom used to say to me, I can't believe you did that. I used to hate when she says, I can't believe you did that. Then she says this, I can't believe you did that to me. Like, go ahead, rub salt in the wound now. You know? I can't believe you did that to me. Do you understand that that's just manipulation and it's a source to control? So we're going to look at it. We got to talk about it because we're talking about empowering versus controlling. Okay? Can I say this? When we come out with those kind of points, we're setting ourselves up for an argument or setting ourselves up for a fight. Most confrontations will end up in a fight because we didn't approach it. Here's what the Bible says. In the spirit of gentleness. In the spirit of meekness. Okay? Spirit of meekness says, I'm not going to judge you and I'm not going to control you. I want to empower you. Okay? That's a huge phrase right there. Okay? So, if I'm going to have a confrontation, I got to have the right goals. Okay? My attitude and my behavior is going to flow out of my intent. So, my intent is to empower, to strengthen you, to bring you to a higher place. I mean, no, repent, bring you to a higher place, right? I'm wanting to bring you to a higher place. So, my desire, okay, and my attitude, my behavior, it's all going to flow out of my intent, okay? If I'm going to have a confrontation, one of the things I got to do is I've got to have some goals. What am I trying to accomplish through this confrontation? We're going to have a confrontation. What are we going to accomplish? What are we going to try to get to happen? What's the end result of our conversation? Okay? If I'm going to have a confrontation with you, I want to know what's the fruit of this thing going to look like at the end. Make sense? If we're going to have a discussion, we're going to have a time. What do I want to see accomplished? What's the fruit of this thing? What would be the best case scenario we could take away? That's my goal. You understand that? What's it going to be? So I start to look at that. What's that going to be? Okay? What's my intent? What's the core? At the very core of this, I want to introduce the consequences of the situation. Not so that you have a fear of the punishment, but so that I can strengthen and teach. Right? Watch this. My 12-year-old son has a curfew of 9 o'clock. And he came in at 10 o'clock. Sounds like an idea for confrontation, doesn't it? Now, he's coming through the door knowing we're going to have a confrontation. What do you think's been happening since 9:45? He has been preparing himself for the battle. Okay, with every excuse and reason why he's an hour late, and he knows exactly who all's fault it is out there that he's late, because he's ready to blame everyone and everything, and it was the car, well, you know, whatever. You know, guess it wasn't the car, he's only 12. If he had the car, we're really going to have a confrontation. Had a flat tire on my bicycle, I don't know. Whatever, okay? But I don't want to just scream at him and tell him what his punishment is going to be because he's late. I'm going to confront him. We're going to talk about the consequences of his action. But I want to teach and strengthen him, right? As to, this is what happened. Now, what we're going to come through this. And I'll get to this toward the end. I want to ask some questions. Because what I really want to do is empower him to stop making bad choices. Y'all follow what I just said? The goal of my confrontation is to empower my son with the right kind of thinking so that he realizes this was a bad choice. I can't continue. How many know if I continue to make bad choices, I'm going to get bad results? I want to power and strengthen and teach him to make good choices so he gets good results. Okay? But how are we going to do it? We're going to confront that. But if I begin by screaming and yelling, "What's wrong with you? I can't believe you did this," immediately every wall goes up. And pretty soon, it's only like in 3 seconds, he has quit hearing me completely. What's he hear? Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah. And he's already... And can I say this? Can I say this? As a husband and wife thing, let me tell you. When that goes on between husbands and wives, once you reach a certain decibel, us men don't hear you anymore. All we are doing is processing, thinking, "I wish you'd shut up so I can tell you what I think." Okay? And we've no longer heard you. We have now tuned you out, and all we're doing is processing our next statement. And we know that you're not done because your lips are still moving. But when they stop, we're ready to tell you something. Okay? It's a man thing. We can't help it. We're wired that way. Okay? Yeah. Come on, all you men can say amen. Okay. It's true, okay? Because you didn't approach us in a spirit of gentleness. But it works both ways. It works both ways. And y'all know that, right? Okay? So let me cover some things. We want to introduce the consequences into situations that are for teaching and strengthening. It's not about bringing increasing levels of the threat of punishment. Okay? Because we've talked about that. It isn't even about that, okay? One of the things that I've worked with my kids was I want to introduce to you and help you understand the quality of your life is built around the quality of the choices you make. The better the choices, the better your life. But I need to empower you to make good choices. I need to give you permission to make good choices. How many understand that there's one perfect father? He's a perfect father. He's a perfect father. Has he let me make bad choices? Does God let me make bad choices? Does he try to control me? Or does he try to empower me to make good choices? Do you understand what I'm saying? So in that process, sometimes, I'll talk to you. A child's small, right? And he's about to do something that's going to inflict pain in his body. So we want to stop him from doing that. Can I tell you, here's a thought, just a thought. And again, every situation is going to be a little bit different. So hear this all in the right way. But if he's going to do something that's going to cause a small amount of pain, we may be better off to let them do that so that they learn there's a consequence to that that brings a small amount of pain. So when they're bigger, they're not doing something similar that's going to cause a lot bigger amount of pain. Why? Because how many of you learned more from your mistakes than the things that you did right? Do you understand there's something to that? Because I'm telling you, I can stand here 100% transparent and tell you, I've learned tons more from what I did wrong than what I did right. I've learned a lot from my mistakes. That's how I got so smart. Okay, I've made bunches of them. Okay, in that, okay, watch this, because there's consequences and they need to learn from that. That's all I wanted to hit there, okay? But I want to help my kid understand, or whoever I'm confronting, even as a pastor dealing with a matter with a church situation or whatever, I want folks to understand the quality of your life is built around the choices that you're making in life. So I'm constantly in counseling, and I'm finding that a lot of times I want people to understand you're in this situation because this is the choice that you made. And a lot of times I'll ask them, "How's that working for you? How's that working for you?" "Well, you're sitting here in my office. Guess what? I don't think it's working real well." or you wouldn't be here. We got to understand that sometimes the quality of our life is so determined by the choices that we make. And my goal is to help you change the way you think so that you'll make better choices. Does that make sense? All right, so let's go with that and stay with that for just a second. Let's go a step further, because the next thing we want to do, I want to, in the middle of that, remind you of some things you forgot when you fell. Remember Galatians 6 and 1 says, when you see a brother overtaken by a fault, okay, so let's call it when you see somebody fell in the hole, I want to remind you of some things that you forgot when you fell in that hole. I want to remind you of what an amazing person you are. Because one of the things that I firmly believe in is we're cultivating a culture of honor, is that we're here to bring the gold out of everybody around us. Can I tell you that when you fell in the hole, you forgot what an amazing person you are? And all you're doing is remembering you're the person in the hole. You're covered with guilt. You're covered with shame. You're covered with condemnation. And when you're when you've fallen in that hole, when you're struggling in that place, you're discontented. You're struggling like crazy. And all you're thinking about is what a lousy person you are. And it's my job to remind you of what an amazing person you are. I don't need to tell you you messed up. You already know you messed up. Does that make sense? When my kids would mess up, and I don't know how it worked for everybody. When our kids were young, and I was working plus pastoring, my wife did this, and she didn't do it very long. We talked about it real strong. But she'd say, you wait till your dad gets home. Boy, are you in trouble when your dad gets home, you know? And I'd come home, and I've always been pretty gentle. It's just in my nature to be gentle. And I'd come home, and she'd say, you better talk to Nicole. This is what she did. She did. And Lori's been out of shape over this thing, right? I said, baby, talk to me, Nicole. What's going on? And she'd be crying, telling me what she did wrong. I said, okay, we got to fix this, right? What do you want to do? And there's some power to asking all the right questions. We're going to go to that in just a little bit. But there's a lot can be learned by asking your child to process questions. Whether that's your child, whether that's another church member, whether that's a situation in the family, whatever it might be. There's empowerment through asking the right questions. We'll get to that in a little while. But the idea was, I'd sit there, process through all that. She'd be crying the whole time. And then at the end, I'd say, okay, what did we learn? And then we'd go through what we learned. And then she'd leave. And Lori would be pretty frustrated at me because you didn't scream at her. You didn't yell at her. You didn't tell her how bad she was. I didn't need to tell her how bad she was. The tears were coming. She already knew how bad she was. There was repentance that was taking place. And I was just trying to help her change the way she thinks. Does that make sense? So there's an empowerment in helping people to change the way they think. That's our goal. You understand where I'm at? Confrontation isn't controlling you. It's empowering you to help you change the way you think. If you're in the hole and you know you're in the hole, let's find your way out of the hole. You that are strong ought to restore such a one. What? Get them out of the hole. What? In the spirit of gentleness. Help them change the way they think so they don't end up back in the hole. Because if I get you out of the hole, but I didn't change the way you think, guess what? Next week you're in the hole again. Okay? Yeah. Somehow we got to fill the hole in with something else besides you. Okay? Now, watch this, because there's some strong stuff. Okay? We got to remind people of what they forgot. You're amazing. You're incredible. You're created in the image of God. I believe that all that person thinks is, I need to punish myself. Most of us, when we mess up, feel like we deserve to be punished. Does that make sense? Sure. How many of you are your own worst critic? You beat yourself up on a regular basis. Sometimes we live in that arena. Okay, I messed up. Stupid me. I'm the dumbest person on the planet. And we've said all the wrong things. And really, you're just cursing yourself. You're just speaking word curses over yourself in terrible ways. Even if they're not verbal, you're thinking them. And that's just a terrible way to live. Okay? We're going to learn a word later on. I might even get into this today. Unpunishable. I want to become unpunishable. It's a word that I read in a book called Culture of Honor. It's written by a guy named Danny Silk. It's an amazing book. I would encourage anybody, get your hands on that book and read it. It's absolutely phenomenal. There's a story about a young couple that was second-term students in the Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry. And that story in itself is worth the price of the book. It's an amazing story. Culture of Honor, yeah. Culture of Honor by Danny Silk. It's an amazing book. I think we have it in the bookstore downstairs. No, because I wouldn't get it exactly right, and it's a really long story, but it's an amazing story. It really, really is. And it really deals with this as a confrontation. Huh? It is. It's amazing. But I want to get to this because the fact is, if I can help you to understand, you're created in the image of God and that God absolutely marvelously loves you. I want to reach into the hole, pull you out of the hole and ask you questions like, do you see you? You're amazing. I don't want to patronize you. One of the things that I absolutely hate is when somebody just comes along and wants to patronize. Do you understand when I say patronize you? Okay, let's deal with the issues. But let's help people understand, you're amazing. All too often in life, we've had a lot of people come along who have told us how lousy we are. And I honestly believe the world's really starving for somebody to tell you how amazing you are. Many of us in my age bracket grew up with our parents spending a whole lot of time telling us what's wrong with us. But we had very few people that ever told us what was right with us. I honestly believe the world's starving for people to tell us what's right with us. We want somebody to tell us, you are amazing. But to tell us in a way that we'd actually believe it. You know? Because honestly, if somebody's come along telling you you're amazing, but they don't say it with any conviction or they don't, like when they don't believe it, you just want to slap them. I don't know. Is that fair to say that? Okay. It's like, shut up. Just go away. Okay. You know? And you would never say that, but sometimes, you know what I mean? You know when it's real and when it's not real. Watch this, because it's huge, okay? When you're in the hole, you've kind of given up on greatness. Like, you just don't even believe you could ever be great again. You're in the hole. There's nothing great about being in the hole. You've given up on greatness. Confrontation comes along. And what I want to do is I want to confront you, bring you out of the hole, explain to you how great you are, and we begin to start dealing with the issues. I want to try to empower you to make good decisions. We're going to get moving forward in that. It's an invitation for us to strengthen our relationship. I'm going to confront this issue with you because we're going to strengthen our relationship through confrontation. Remember that I said we felt like confrontation was something we wanted to avoid, when actually it's an invitation to strengthen something incredible in our life. Whether that's confrontation between husbands and wives, whether that's between bosses and employees, whether that's between pastors or spiritual authorities, you know what I mean? Whatever. Confrontation's not a bad thing, and we got to quit looking at it as a bad thing and kind of see it for the blessing that it's meant to be. Galatians 6:1 says we need to confront the issues, but we need to do it in a spirit of gentleness, because we're going to empower one another. It's an invitation to strengthen our covenant relationships. You everybody see that when I say that? You understand what I'm saying? It's really an opportunity if we handle it well. Okay? Can I tell you something? This is huge. One of the mentoring classes, I spent a long time talking about this. You have an amazing opportunity to speak into somebody's life. But the only way you are ever empowered to speak into somebody's life with any authority is they have to believe that you have their best interest in your heart. Because if you think I'm just trying to control you, you're not going to hear me. But if you think I'm going to empower you, you will. Do you understand what I just said? If you think I'm trying to control you, you don't want to hear that. But if you think I'm trying to empower you, you're all ears. Okay? But you've got to believe that I have your best interest. If we're in a confrontation, you're not just there trying to defend yourself. You're actually going to listen to me because you believe that I care about you. You believe that I love you. I tell all my leadership in the church, I tell them this. If I ever call you into the office and I begin the statement, the conversation with, you know I love you, right? Okay. There's usually something coming after that. Okay. You know I love you, right? Okay. If somebody comes to you and says, you know I love you, right? You know that there's something confrontational that's coming immediately after that. And you've got about 3 seconds to process, do they really mean that? Okay. Because I got to know if you really love me or not. Right? Because I'm going to give you a place to speak into my life if I actually believe that you love me. But if I don't believe that you love me, why would I give you a place to speak in my life? You may just be trying to hurt me. You may be trying to damage me. You may be trying to control me. And I'm not sure I want you to do that because I don't know if you love me. But if there's trust, if I can trust you, then I'm going to allow myself to become, here's a good word, vulnerable to your words. Because your words carry power. Your words mean something to me. Because I've trusted you. Make sense? Now watch this. Okay? So I got to know that you love me, and we're going to build trust out of that. Because there's different levels of trust. Okay? I got to believe, if you're here to confront me, you love me enough, you're setting me up to win. You're actually trying to empower me. You're actually trying to help me. You are setting me up for success, not failure. Is that serious? You all understand what I'm saying? So there's a level of trust that gets involved with some of that, all right? You're not trying to control me. You're trying to empower me. That's a strong phrase to me. If I'm going to confront you, I need to remember this, that in the confrontation, you have to be powerful as well. That we're meeting on level ground. It's not me speaking to you. Y'all follow what I just said? Right? Come on. Come on. Put that in a marriage relationship and see what I'm talking about. Right? Me speaking to you. Okay. Right? It's not... Can I talk to you? Here's a word. Church abuse. Spiritual abuse. Who's ever heard those phrases? Sometimes even pastors or spiritual authorities have gotten to that place where they felt like I'm the authority and I said so. And all of a sudden, the climate changed. There's been a lot of spiritual abuse that's taken place. And by people who felt like because I'm the authority, I have the right to control you. And it was all born out of control, never out of empowerment. Y'all follow that? So in the process, what happens is we've got to make sure that we're on level ground and you're just as powerful in the confrontation. I'm not here to convince you that I've got power and you don't. That's dishonor. That cultivates fear and anxiety, and all of a sudden the defense is all come up. Okay? And I'm not, at that point, when I'm trying to convince you that I have power and you don't, I'm going to bring out the worst in you, not the best in you. I'm going to get the worst you got. Because you've just become mega defensive. And the cat's claws went, ting, okay? You were ready to get your eyes scratched out. You know what I mean? And it's like, bruh. Come on, you know that happens. That's real life. That's real life. We find that in a lot of confrontation in marriages. One's trying to control the other. The husband's trying to control the wife. The wife's trying to control the husband. And through the midst of that, we weren't trying to empower one another. We were trying to control one another. And it went like this. And guess who won? Nobody. Nobody ever wins in that. Okay? I'm going to honor you and empower you. What I'm literally saying in the confrontation, if it's done right, is I'm saying I am offering you the strength of my life toward your success. That was worth writing down right there. I'm offering you the strength of my life toward your success. Do you understand that? And that's what confrontation ought to look like. I'm offering you the strength of everything that I have, of my entire life, toward your success. That's powerful. That's a powerful word right there. Okay? Now, confrontation is designed to strategically apply pressure to expose the areas that need strength and grace over them. It's like you got a broken spot. And we got to fix that broken spot. Danny Silk was teaching in a class about right along this line of confrontation. He said, for years I worked as a tire jockey, logging trucks. And he said, I would take the flat tire on a logging truck, right? Okay? So you got to take all the lug nuts off the tire. You got to take that tire off, right? But you can't find the flat tire just by looking at the tire, because there's an inner tube inside, right? So you got to take all the lug nuts off. Then you got to break the tire down and pull the tube out. Once you've pulled that tube out, okay, you are not going to just examine the tube from the outside and try to find the hole. What are you going to do? You're going to put a bunch of air in that tube. You're going to blow it up and make it bigger than it was even inside the tire. Because external pressure won't find the hole. Internal pressure will expose the hole. You take it and you submerge it in the water. Right? You submerge the tube in the water. Who's ever done this with a bicycle tire? You know what I'm talking about? You put it in the water and you start spinning the tire around. What are you doing? You're looking for the bubbles. Because when that thing starts bubbling, you know there's air blowing out of it. You've now found your hole. Now that you've found your hole, you can patch it. Because you couldn't find the hole while it was still encased inside the tire. You brought the tube outside of the tire. You applied internal pressure. And once the thing expanded, then you were able to examine until you could find the hole. Why are you saying that for, Pastor? Here's why. Because usually a confrontation comes because symptoms have been exposed. But the symptoms are very, 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 very seldom the problem. The symptoms were just pointing that there's an underlying problem. The symptoms exposed there's a problem, but they weren't the problem. Right? Come on. If you got a runny nose, it's probably not the problem. You probably have some kind of virus that's caused that runny nose. It's a symptom. In the same essence, watch this. If you're explosive with anger or rage, that's a symptom, but that's probably not the problem. The problem may go way back, and we've got to come back and find out what that was. We're going to apply internal pressure, right? Because you don't get this from the outside, you get this from the inside. External pressure is not going to do it. Internal pressure exposes the areas that need repaired. Okay? But here's the deal. The key comes back to trust. You got to trust enough to become vulnerable to expose that area or that weakness to whoever you're having a confrontation with. Do you think most people have a trust problem? I think a lot of people really, really struggle with trust. Even in the body of Christ, we struggle with trust. Why do you think we struggle with trust? Because trust has been violated so much in our lives. People that we trusted hurt us. Do you know one of the most interesting phrases to me in the Bible is that Judas betrayed Jesus. Why? Do you understand that a stranger can't betray you? Never been betrayed by a stranger. I've never been betrayed by an enemy. An enemy doesn't have the power to betray you. Only a friend has the power to betray you. Do you understand that? Yeah. One of the first times that I dealt with a church situation where a very strong couple in my church was going through a divorce. She had caught him having an affair. with another woman. And she was devastated. And she was a horrible mess. And then she got stronger. And I talked with her some more. And then she called me one night and she was a disaster. And you know what she was saying? I wish he'd have just died. I wish he'd have just died. I wish he'd have just died. And she must have said that like 15 times on the phone. Do you know why? Because death doesn't carry betrayal. If he'd have just died, I could have handled that a whole lot better than the fact that he ran off with this other woman. Because this now the fact that he ran off with this other woman says he's betrayed my trust. Death didn't betray me. It wasn't your fault you died. You just died. But this was intentional. You betrayed my trust. Y'all follow what I just said? That's really huge to me. So there's a betrayal in the midst of that. And in the midst of that betrayal, what I look at and I think about it is trust is such an incredibly valuable thing. Do you know when we learn trust? Caleb and Lindsay had a little girl last night.
Oh, yeah.
That little baby girl, Adeline Rose, 7 pounds, 7 ounces. Do you know what? For this first year, that little baby is 100% dependent upon mom and dad. I'm going to get me a pen. I'm going to draw. I got a visual in my head, right? Okay? Check it out. Okay? Now, we'll call this trust. Okay? Little Adeline Rose is a baby, little infant, beautiful little girl. You know what she's going to do for the next year? She's going to eat. She's going to poop. She's going to cry. She's going to laugh. And she's going to be 100% dependent upon mom and dad. Right? So there's some things that are going to have to happen with that, right? Okay? It's a trust cycle. So little Adeline Rose, okay, is now in a trust cycle. So when she needs something, what's she going to do? She's got a need. So you know what she's going to do? She's going to express that need. Okay? So the need's going to be expressed. Okay? How's she going to express that? Yeah! She can't say, I'm hungry, Dad. Come and feed me. She's 2 months old. She's not going to be able to say, Dad, I'm hungry. Can you get me a bottle? No, I don't want that one. Give me the other one. No, I had that the other day. Give me some of this. Yeah, she's not going to say that. She doesn't have the ability. All she can do is cry. Right? What she's saying is, I have a need. Okay? Who knows? When you have a baby that's crying, we do 3 things. Come on. The first thing we do is, okay, we're good. Right? Come on. Do we do that or not? Come on. Baby's crying. You're going to check. Does this baby need its diaper changed? Right? Because there's a need. It doesn't need changed. So we're going to put a bottle in its mouth. Okay? Why? Because it might be hungry. Okay? But if the baby's not sucking the bottle, what are we going to do? Oh, maybe the baby just needs rest and comfort. So we hug the baby and we rock the baby and we sing to the baby. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. I never knew where that song came from. Okay? Mama's going to buy you a mockingbird. What, did y'all do that? Never mind. Okay? Okay? Yeah. Y'all don't know that? Okay, never mind. Might be a different generation. I don't know. But anyway, maybe it's a Western Pennsylvania thing. Okay. But the babies express the need. Okay. So we're going to do that 3-point check. We're going to find out what's going on with this baby and what does this baby need? What are we doing? Okay. The baby has expressed the need. So what are we going to do? We're going to respond to the baby's need. Okay. So now we're going to respond to that need. What are we doing? We're building trust. Okay? Let's say the baby was hungry. So we got the baby the bottle, and the baby is now sucking on the bottle, and the baby is happy. Okay, what happened? The need has been satisfied. What'd we do? We just taught this baby to trust. The baby just learned trust. The baby learned, if I have a need and I cry, then you're going to respond to my need and my need's going to be satisfied. So what will happen? The next need that I have, I'll express my need. My need will be responded to and satisfied. Do you understand that that's a cycle? Right? Okay. So we learn the trust cycle as an infant, as a baby who can't take care of himself. And this is the trust cycle that begins to start. Even as a little baby, we learn this is what life is like, right? So this works. But what happens when we express the need? We have a need. We express our need, okay? And our need now, not respond to. Nobody responded to our need. I expressed my need, but no one responded to my need. Therefore, my need went unsatisfied. And what happened to my trust? All of a sudden, I began to lose trust. And I found that people aren't always trustworthy. The cycle's been broken. And now I'm challenged as to how to trust, when to trust, who to trust. And sometimes trust is very, very hard, especially when trust has been violated. Right? Watch this. I had a need, and my need was to share my intimate secret with you in confidentiality. So I expressed that need by sharing my secret with you, okay? And you responded to my need by loving me, comforting me, and keeping my confidentiality. So now my need was satisfied. I was able to vent, and I felt like that you were somebody I could trust when I had a need. So I came to you with my next secret that was even bigger and maybe more confidential and more personal. And I told you my need because I trust you. But when I trusted you and told you my need, you didn't respond to it very well. You went and told your friend, who went and told their friends. And it wasn't too long till everybody knew what I only shared with you. And what happened? Immediately walls went up. And I learned you can't trust people. And now I've built a wall to keep you out that's become a prison that's only kept me in. Y'all follow what I've said there? Does everybody see that? Because that's really, really clear. Okay? So in confrontation, what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to create a trust cycle. But I got to tell you something. My trust cycle needs to be created with you long before the confrontation. Because if you don't trust me, we're not going to have a confrontation. We're going to have an argument. Do y'all understand what I just said? That's huge right there. I've got to build a relationship with you. Can I say this? I can say this. I feel pretty comfortable with this. I've known John for, 25 years or more. Somewhere close to that. Okay? He's known me well enough that he could share just about, I think, I probably know more about John than probably anybody on the planet knows about you. Is that true? That's probably true. John's lived with us different times and whatever. We've known each other a long time. He trusts me. I believe John could come and tell me anything he needed to tell me. If John needs $20, he'd come and say, "Man, I'm broke. I need 20 bucks." And I'd say, "Tell Dean." No, okay. Dean got lots of money. No, okay. No, he'd come and he'd share that with me. I'm not going to run around and tell everybody, "Yeah, John's broke again. He needs another $20. Yeah. That's between me and him, right? He trusts me. I trust him. We're good. He said, "I'll pay you back when I get money one day." I just believe so. I've lent John money lots of different times. He's always paid me back. I don't have any problem trusting John because he's proved himself trustworthy. Does that make sense? I honestly believe this. I can say this. I trust John enough. If I had $1 million in a briefcase and I had to go away for 2 years, I'd hand a briefcase to John. 2 years later, I come get that briefcase back. I'm not counting the money. I just know it's going to be in there. I don't need to see if there's 999,999. I know there's $1 million in there. I'm not even going to worry about it. Whatever was in there when I gave it to him, be in there when I got it back. I trust John. Why? Because over that 25 years, he's proved himself trustworthy. I don't want to violate his trust. He doesn't want to violate my trust. We have a trust relationship. Make sense? Okay. Go ahead, Tom, then I'll finish this.
What did John do with the other million?
Did I say two?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, hey. What did you do with that? Okay. Okay. Yeah, okay.
You have 2 billion.
If you got two coats and your brother don't have any, you're supposed to give him one. Okay. Y'all follow what I'm saying, though. We built that trust relationship a long time ago. Okay? But let's say this. Let's say I know Daniel. Now, I've only known Daniel from the class, and I haven't known him very long, and we haven't spent any real time together. It might be that Daniel has been friends with Phyllis for a long time. Daniel and Phyllis have known each other for 25 years, which would be really hard for him. Okay? Okay? But let's just say that, right? And they've known each other for all this time. All right? And Daniel has a situation. I may not be the one to confront Daniel in that. But Phyllis knows me, and she trusts me. And I trust her. And we've known each other for a long time. We've built a trust relationship. I might say to Phyllis, you need to be the one to deal with Daniel. Why? Because they already have a trust relationship. Does that make sense? Because she's going to be much more effective speaking into Daniel's life. Watch. If you see a brother overtaken in a fault, ye that are spiritual ought to go to one in a spirit of meekness or gentleness, right? She's going to be the one to address that much more than maybe I would. But you're the pastor. You're the spiritual authority. It's not even about that. It's about trust relationships. Phyllis has a much deeper place to speak into Daniel's life because she's earned that place in his life by building trust. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Y'all follow what I'm saying? Because that's huge to me, okay? What's happened is we got this twisted and we felt like, well, you're the pastor. You need to deal with this. You understand that we're a family? And as a family, we need to deal with this. So the family of God is here to restore, uplift, and build one another. And we need to be taken. When Cain said to God, "Am I my brother's keeper?" We twisted that. Because I'll tell you something. You are your brother's keeper. You are your brother's keeper. It says so in Galatians 6 and 1. You which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. I think you are your brother's keeper. Y'all follow that? It's not the pastor's responsibility. It might be part of the pastor's responsibility, but you share in that responsibility. So do I. It's not just the evangelist or the prophet or the apostle, or you can pick. You pick one. Put a title on it. It's not just their responsibility. We share in a common responsibility. It's called the family of God. And we share with one another. That's huge to me. We've got to work at this because we had it twisted. And we felt like confrontation was a bad thing and it was never meant to be that way. So we talk about trust cycles, okay? And learning to trust and learning to have confidence in one another. Okay? So watch this. Here, let's talk about this. Because in the trust cycle, you've expressed your need, right? You had your need, and you expressed your need. Can I tell you something? One of the greatest problems we run into is right here. Sometimes the need that's presented is not necessarily the need. I might not be able to help you if you don't express your need properly. Right? Because the need that you might present and the need that you have may be two different things, and you didn't present it well. Let me share that, okay? To fully present your need and to express it properly, you got to be able to trust me. If I'm going to confront you in your need, you've got to trust me, right? Now, I couldn't tell you the countless number of times I got into counseling situations that presented themselves here, and within a half an hour, that thing had swung all the way over here. Because through that process, the need that was presented wasn't at all the need that was real. The real need was way over here. But I have to be able to help you express your need, right? Two people are having conflict, and they come to me as a married couple. They're having conflict, and they're just butting heads all the time. And it's because he doesn't understand me, she doesn't understand me, blah, 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 back and forth over and over. And the truth of the matter was, 15, 20 minutes into the conversation, we found out that their monthly bills are $4,283, and their monthly income is $3,500. What's their real problem? Right. They have a financial problem that expressed itself in stress and anxiety that caused them to constantly be butting heads with one another through the stress and the anxiety, when the fact of the matter was they were butting heads. The stress and the anxiety wasn't the problem of them. It wasn't the reason they were butting heads. The stress and the anxiety came because they have a terrible financial problem. They've been poor financial management. And now because of their poor financial management, it has expressed itself in conflict over here. But if we can come back and they can do a second mortgage on their house, set their bills in line, and now I can adjust them and help them to get to the place where now their monthly income is $4,215 and their monthly outflow is only $3,500. Now, all of a sudden, things have changed. You understand what I just said? Yeah. I had an older couple. This is a true story. They were in my office. I'm going to say they were in their mid to late 60s. Well, they were probably in their late 60s, and they were going at it. And I mean, they didn't have any problem going at it in my office with me. They were going at it. And he said to her, he said, and these were very spiritual people. I don't want to take away if you knew. I better shut up. Okay. But anyway, but they were going at it to the plate. Here's what happened. He looked at her and said, "You're stupid. That's what's wrong with you. You're just stupid." She looked at him and she said, "You think I'm stupid?" He said, "Yeah, you're stupid." She said, "I suppose you think you're pretty smart." He said, "Well, I am pretty smart." And she stopped and said, "You're right." And he looked at her like, "What are you saying that for?" Because he's planning on arguing. You know what I mean? They've been arguing for a long time here. And she said, "You're right." And he said, "That's right, I am right." She said, "I know you're right. I'm stupid and you're smart. Because look who I married and look who you married." That's a true story. "I'm stupid and you're smart."
Come on.
I lost it right there. It was like, go home. I thought it was amazing. Here's the deal. Their argument was over all the things that were presenting themselves, and they had that scenario that we were talking about. Is the fact was he had retired. Their bills were still adjusted to his income while he was working, but his retirement wasn't anywhere near what his income had been. Their savings had all but dwindled away to nothing. They were in panic mode because what are we going to do when the savings account's out? And they were doing this. All we did was put them into a reverse mortgage. Who knows what a reverse mortgage is? Sell your house back to the bank and they give you money every month. They didn't have any children that were in need of any inheritance. They have two kids. Their kids were horribly well off. You know what I mean? Horribly well off. Yeah, horribly well off. It was pitiful, the money the one boy makes. I'm thinking, pay mom and dad's house off, because he could have done it easily. They just put the house into a reverse mortgage, and the bank was paying them $1,200 a month just for the reverse mortgage on the house because of their age. They do that all on mortality tables. I don't know if you're familiar with how that all works, but it was an amazing thing, and it blessed them, and they were fine. What are you saying? The need that presented itself immediately in my office wasn't at all the need that was really present in their life. So when you look at a trust cycle, there's a need there, but you've got to help that person express what the need really is. And they've got to be vulnerable. And who knows, here's where the real problem in that scenario was, is the man was ashamed because he grew up with the mentality, it's my job to provide enough income for my family. And because he felt like he wasn't doing his job, he was very reluctant to present what was the real need. Y'all follow what I just said? Right? He had to become vulnerable and trust me enough that he could present the real need so that we could respond to the need, so that the need could be satisfied, so he could learn to continue to trust and express need. Does that make sense? Follow that? So we had a confrontation in my office, but it established trust and covenant. To this day, they're both still alive and we're very close. Even in the midst of all the conflict that took place in the office, we had confrontation. We were able to express the need. Do y'all follow this? There was empowerment. And all I was doing was trying to help empower them to make good decisions. Do y'all see that? Okay? That's just amazing to me. That's what we're looking at, okay? So confrontation is all about empowerment, okay? Okay. So watch this. If I don't understand this, okay? Because my goal is to find that need. Confrontation is about finding the need and discovering a remedy. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Y'all follow what I'm saying? So in that, if I can say this, if I don't understand that, all right, then confrontation really becomes my effort to supply my need. You and I have a confrontation, and our confrontation is 100% my effort to supply my need. You have done, the reason we're having a confrontation is because you've done something that's either hurt me or scared me. And confrontation then becomes my goal is to make you stop hurting me or stop frightening me. I'm going to control you so that you stop hurting me. I'm going to control you so you stop scaring me. That's usually what confrontation looks like. Everybody understand that?
Right.
Would you see confrontation that way?
Okay,
you understand that? Confrontation, we're going to confront because Donna's doing something I don't like and I'm going to make her stop it because I have authority over her. Am I right? Husband and wife, yeah, I doubt it, yeah. Watch this. Yeah, you know her, huh? Okay, watch this, because what will happen is when we have that kind of confrontation, what we're doing is we're going to butt heads and we're going to find out who has more power. And I'll show you I'm more powerful than you.
Yes, you are.
Okay? Yeah, no. Watch this. Husband and wife. Confrontation. Is it a lot of times, is it a power control? Come on, it's a control. Who's in charge? Right? John Ross said something I thought was amazing. We were talking about marriage, and he said, when two people get married, he said, the Bible says two become one. And the battle's usually over which one? Two become one. The battle's over which one? Okay? But there's confrontation. That's it. Exactly. So watch this. So when we have confrontation, if we don't understand the proper way of dealing with confrontation, then what we're really doing is it becomes my effort to supply my need. When I finally do say something to you, it's because I need something. And now I'm trying to direct you, okay, because I need something. And that's often the goal of punishment. I'm going to punish you until you give me what I need from you. Do you understand that? I'm going to punish you until you give me what I need from you. How many dads punished their kids and screamed in their face, "You will respect me!" And kids never respected them, they feared them. There's a difference between fear and respect. Y'all find that? So all of our actions then became fear motivated or fear driven rather than respect driven. I'd rather you obeyed me because you respect and honor me. So my goal with confrontation then becomes getting you to respect and honor me rather than fear me as a father-son relationship. Y'all follow what I'm saying? Let me come back to the scripture. When you see a brother overtaken in a fault, you that are spiritual, so there has to be constantly a spiritual mindset. God, who's my Father, has treated me a certain way. I should learn from him. Is he my example? He's the example of a perfect father. So I've got to learn what's he speaking into my life. Y'all follow? I'm doing all right. Watch this, okay? Because if I look, you did something that hurt or scared me, and I want control. So I'm telling you, you've got to submit yourself to my punishment so I can demonstrate that I'm back in control. Y'all follow that? You hurt me or scared me. You were out of control. I'm now calling you to a place where you have to submit yourself to my punishment so I can demonstrate I'm back in control. Okay? So doing that with my child, doing that with my spouse, doing that with somebody, you understand? And we're geared that way because that's the way we've seen confrontation. That's the way confrontations look to us. So we looked at it and said, oh, confrontation's bad. I don't want to have confrontation. That's why I said for years as a pastor, I was very non-confrontational. I didn't want confrontation. Confrontation's bad. Confrontation says somebody's out of control. And that was never what it was meant to be. Confrontation was meant to be an empowerment. And if I can catch that confrontation is never about control and always about empowerment, it'll change the way I see it. It'll change the way I think. It'll change the way I look. It's going to change the way I deal with my children. It's going to change the way I deal with my spouse. It's going to change the way I deal with my coworkers or my boss or those that are in spiritual authority. It's going to change the way I see things. Because now I'm looking at confrontation from a whole different level. I'm looking at confrontation. Actually, this can be advantageous because it's about empowerment. Everybody wants to be empowered. There's nobody that doesn't want to be empowered. We're helping empower this. So watch this. It may have been in that book, Culture of Honor. I think it is. The dad has this deal with his kids. So, mom tells the daughter, it's your responsibility to wash the dishes after dinner. And they have a dishwasher. So it's a matter of rinsing them off, cleaning up the plates, and putting them in the dishwasher. Not a big chore. But the girl doesn't want to do that. She's got other things on her mind. She's running here and there. Mom says, make sure you clean up the dishes, make sure you clean up the dishes, make sure you clean up the dishes. And after several times, the daughter's all of a sudden missing. She has now run off with her friends, said goodbye on her way out the door, and never dealt with the dishes. So dad gets up and does the dishes. Cleans them all up. Scrapes them off, puts the garbage in the garbage can, puts the dishes in the dishwasher, sets it all up, puts the little soapy thing in, turns it on. Not a bad deal. But they have a deal in their house that if I do your responsibility, you have to do one of mine. Right? Now he's empowered his kids to make choices. She could have done the dishes. Not a bad deal. Okay? So now dad has two responsibilities this weekend, and the 17-year-old daughter now gets the choice to pick one. She can either clean out the garage, or she can clean out the chicken shed. Because those were on dad's list for this weekend. Because she chose not to do the dishes, and dad had to do her responsibility, he has now empowered her. I did your job, you get to do one of mine. These are my two, pick one. Y'all follow that? What was he doing? He was teaching her to accept your responsibility. But if you don't accept your responsibility, okay, now we have a confrontation. But I'm empowering you. I'm empowering you to make a good choice. But now you have to make another choice. You've not chosen here, so now you get to choose here. The garage or the chicken shed? She chooses the chicken shed. How many ever cleaned out a chicken shed? It's not a neat job. Okay? But the garage was much messier. Okay, so it was down to that. You know what I mean? But it was on the board. You got to pick. You understand? There's an empowerment here. All I'm trying to do is empower my child to make good choices. Confrontation is about empowerment, not about control. It's about empowerment. Can you see it through those eyes? Okay? That becomes huge. There's a whole bunch more to this. Let's take a 15-minute break right now, and we'll come back to it, because I want to talk to you. We have to pick it up from here. I want to tie a whole bunch of things together, okay?